This is Mocha Jasmine Johnson, and it's time for a real conversation. Today, I am here with Kimberly Davis and Chalice Montgomery. How are you doing today, ladies?
Doing good. Trying to stay cool.
Doing well.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty hot outside. Yeah, that muggy hot thing going on right now. All right, so why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about yourselves? Any one of you can go first.
Well, I have learned to take advice from Kimberly, so if she's pointing at me, then I'll go first. This is Chalice. I am a recovering congressional candidate for District 10. Prior to this, I've been a music teacher and a children's minister. I'm the mother of one daughter and been married for the past 18 years.
Wow.
And here I am.
I'm Kimberly Davis. I'm a native of Athens, Georgia. I have lived back here since 2013. And I served as Chalice's communications director for the congressional campaign for District 10.
Okay. So how did you two meet?
It's kind of a funny story because she doesn't remember meeting me or mm-hmm. seeing me. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it was last July, we went to Pulaski Heights Barbecue for Stacey Abrams' first event here in Athens. And she walked in and I saw her, but I saw her daughter Gwen too. Mm-hmm. And Gwen, who is just a little spitfire, brilliant young girl, she was passing out Chalice's business cards, mm-hmm. you know, her candidate business cards. And I just struck up a conversation with her and was talking with her. And I got one of the cards and I went on the website and I signed up to volunteer to do communications because, you know, I'm also a person, a woman of faith, a Christian woman. And I really believe that being a compassionate Christian and a progressive Christian is something that, you know, our country doesn't have enough of. Mm. And so that's what struck a chord with me about Chalice, is that we sort of approach things from that similar mindset. Mm-hmm. So I signed up to volunteer. And at that time, I guess you guys were asking for people's resumes or CVs to see where they would fit. And so I sent mine in mm-hmm. and they decided they wanted to hire me as their communications director.
Okay.
So I got hired on part-time,
air quotes,
as the communications director for the campaign. And I was their first hire. So we met the first time at Two Story, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Been about a year.
So what made you decide to run Chalice?
Oh, boy. I had been kind of in service my whole life. So if you're teaching, you're serving. If you're obviously in children's ministry, you're, you know, out and doing things for the community. And I've also been a little bit of a policy wonk and a politics nerd and kind of, you know, watch news way too much, online way too much. Yes, Kimberly's giving me the eyebrows on that one. And I had seen, you know, the results of the 2016 election and was determined to do more than what I had been doing. I started to get a little bit more active as far as, you know, I guess you would say resistance and protest and things like that. And I turned up at an event in January out in my neck of the woods. I live in Bethlehem in Barrow County. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I stood up and I said a few things and there were some people there from local county parties who said, you know, we think you should run for something. And I said, I think you are absolutely nuts. Because, you know, I mean, I think we think as women that we have to be perfect.
Right.
I think we have to have perfect backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We think we have to have had a perfect educational record or be a multimillionaire, you know, in business mm-hmm. or an attorney or a doctor. I think a successful record of service and a commitment to the community is so much more valuable these days. But, you know, that aside, it was a long walk towards understanding that that was enough for me, understanding that I was enough. And that process took about 5 months until May when we had the vote to repeal the ACA. You remember we saw our congressman celebrating that vote out in the Rose Garden with, you know, kegs of beer, you know, praise Jesus, have a beer kind of moment.
Right.
And look, we repealed your health care. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
Well, my daughter has a chronic illness. She has rheumatoid arthritis. And that, you know, a repeal of the ACA mandate to make sure that everybody is covered would deeply affect us. And so, you know, that happened. The next day, my husband lost his job and wow. our employer provided care. And then we were in that situation. And when you have nothing to lose,
yeah,
you know, it kind of comes down to forgive me, you know, but why the hell not? Why would you not just stand up and say enough is enough? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people said, why didn't you run for dog catcher first? Why didn't you run for school board? Something smaller. You know, really, I took it personally. Our congressman voted against not just our family, but, you know, every other family. There are a lot of other issues at play. You know, his take on immigration, mm-hmm. You know, things he said about the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. They're all just awful. And so it was time for somebody like me to stand up. And then I think the other thing that was a consideration that Kimberly pointed to was I'm tired of seeing my faith weaponized. Mm. I mean, for decades and decades, this has been the case. It's time for progressive Christians mm-hmm. to stand up on the left and say, you know, that's not actually what we're supposed to be about. And you're not going to continue to use Jesus as your wedge.
Yeah. That's deep. I mean, this political thing has definitely taken a big grab of my life. So, you know, I saw you enter the race and I was like, okay. And then I saw someone else enter the race and I'm watching it like a movie because I'm an activist. I'm an activist and I'm just ready to protest. And, I'm new to this political thing. It's been 2 years since I've been in here. And then I see the works of
The machine.
Mm, and the machine. I was a little bit blown away. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know if it's because I was paying closer attention. The first time I ever voted was Obama. So that was the real first time I really paid attention. But it didn't seem as vindictive. But local level, that was the first time I paid attention dealing with local and state government. And I was like, whoa, is this how the game goes? So can you guys tell me, is this normal? The kind of environment that we're in right now and, you know, your experience throughout the campaign, is this type of environment normal right now?
I think we're definitely in a time where it's not as quote unquote, I mean, I hate to use that word, but as civil, particularly when you think about the 2016 presidential election and you think about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and the vitriol that sprung forth, you know, from a lot of people on the far left mm-hmm. With regard to Hillary. I mean, and one of the reasons, you know, I took a closer look at Bernie Sanders was because I really wanted to know what he was about, but there was a lot of his ideas that I didn't agree with. There were a lot of the things he said about the African-American community that I didn't agree with. And then there was a lot of stuff from the left, from his supporters, that was very condescending, very patronizing, very misogynist in my view. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that came through on social media. Like if you put a pro-Hillary post up or you put a pro-Hillary comment up, you're immediately attacked by like 10 or 15 people mm-hmm. or one person who said that you shouldn't have children, mm-hmm. you know, because I wasn't on his side. I didn't believe in Bernie, so I shouldn't have children. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that kind of I faced. And that was one thing where we disagreed because you voted for Sanders in the primary.
But I was smart enough to vote for Hillary
in the general. Exactly. And so that's one of the things that I think has been a major difference. Mm-hmm. And also social media. Social media makes people say and do things that they would never do in person. Mm-hmm. That they would never do in person. You know, we've had contested Democratic primaries before, mm-hmm. Presidential primaries before, that have never been sort of this vitriolic and this however you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But social media has been a real game changer mm-hmm. in terms of how people interact with one another, for good and bad. I mean, you know, organizing via social media has been, you know, amazing. But, you know, the trolls come out too. And we now know that a lot of them were Russian bots. We now know that, you know, our social media was hacked. So I think a lot of that was artificial. Wow. But it still had a great negative impact, I think, on that campaign.
Well, yeah, and there were plenty of people who were trying to gin up support either way by trying to cast this race as Bernie Hillary, which was
not at all. That was strange to me.
It's very ridiculous.
It was, that was kind of strange to me, and I didn't understand that kind of language. Like,
because
how did that start?
Like, well, a part of it is because she's a white woman.
Okay.
And they just view her as this white woman. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people on social media saw her whiteness as a negative, mm-hmm. saw her womanness as a negative. But if you look at what they were running on, her platform and Sanders' platform were remarkably similar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking for any excuse, in my view, mm-hmm. to not support a female candidate.
That's a good way to lead into the next question, because I wanted to find out from a woman's perspective, do you think it was fair playing field? And that wasn't one of my questions. Do you think, because I felt like some of it was kind of bullying and from a female perspective, you know? So do you think that it was a fair playing field?
It's never a fair playing field for women, especially. You know, right now there is an effort at passing the ERA, full ratification of the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. We lack one state. We have 37 states. We need 38 for ratification. And then the Congress would have to go ahead and extend the deadline and allow that amendment to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that doesn't fix all of our problems at all, mm-hmm. but it is a good start. And that's something I've jumped into post-election is working in Georgia to try to make that happen here. Mm-hmm. So that effort is in its nascency. But what I would say, just going back to the conversation about civility,
mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people that are new to the political process, myself included, in this vein. And I think that for so long, the Democratic Party has stood for this kind of quiet civility and has played nice. And we see that hasn't worked for us. And we're trying to figure out how we go about truth-telling in a way that is clear, mm-hmm. in a way that is unambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people confuse, strength with maybe some of the name-calling behaviors and some of the, you know, the ad hominem attacks. So instead of saying, well, you know, I prefer this candidate, you know, because of these policy reasons, you know, it's, she doesn't care. What does she know? She's just a woman, or she's just white, or she's, you know, all of these things, mm-hmm. To try to dehumanize and discredit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we run the risk on the left of playing that same game.
Yeah.
And that was the most disappointing thing about the race is to find out that there are people, you know, who we would expect better of on our side of things,
mm-hmm.
who would prefer power or notoriety or attention
mm-hmm.
over a chance at serving the people.
Right. And then dehumanizing aspect is what bothered me the most, because I'm like, at the end of the day, this is a small town. Mm-hmm. This is a small community. And, you know, we're human beings first. These are people that have families that have to go back to their jobs. So if you don't agree, that's one thing, but this is going to damage some characters. And so what was the worst experience? I want to hear the worst and the best running the camp.
I've been talking for a while.
I think from my standpoint, as someone who knows Shaz, who was born in Athens and has lived here for a long time. One of the worst things was it made the news, so I can talk about it pretty freely, I think, was mm-hmm. when one of Richard Winfield's supporters, you know, wrote that he would kill their candidate. And we didn't take that literally.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that he had a history of attacking Chalice on his Facebook, and we knew that kill their candidate was a metaphor because he the Democratic Party will eat its own. That's kind of what he would kind of put forth. And the idea that, someone would think that it is okay to use that type of language, particularly in a Me Too era.
In this time,
in this town.
Yeah.
That was one of the worst things. And, you know, I made the choice as her communications director and as a Black woman to be the one to write that press release, to be the one quoted in the press release saying enough is enough. We shouldn't stand for this type of language. We need to just be better. And then, you know, to have even my identity sort of washed over, mm-hmm. and to have it be, she said this and she said that. Well, no, I'm the one who came out and said this. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who said enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And as a Black woman, seeing that from people who are supposed to be better and know better, it was very problematic. And then to not have the Winfield campaign come forward until after, mm-hmm. and say that they don't stand for that, that was also highly problematic. I think that was really kind of the worst. And then towards the end of the campaign to have another supporter of Richard Winfield state in a Facebook group that if Chalice could, she would have this person who wrote that kill the candidate lynched.
Ooh, I know, whoa. Ooh.
Yeah, so that was disgusting. It was dehumanizing. And it was dangerous.
Because mm-hmm. you don't know how other people, in this time and age, Charlottesville. Look at the young lady that was out there protesting. And that's what we're talking about, responsibility. Yeah. And it's kind of like you add fuel to the fire. Yeah. And you can't control
how the match is lit.
Right.
Know? Yeah. And so that, you know, enough people, you know, took it down. But enough people didn't come forward and say, this is not, you know, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. I think the best part of the campaign for me, aside from, you know, meeting Chalice and Gwen, was just the campaign team that we put together. Mm-hmm. We had a great, great team. Whitney Deckel was our campaign manager, and she really fostered an environment, I think, where ideas were welcome, particularly from some of the students, mm-hmm. on staff, and the UJ students who are on staff. And just, we really thought too that our message was the best message. So that's kind of how I see the best and worst.
Ugh. Yeah. So I can't just say what she said, right?
Was that one of the worst moments for you, or the worst moment?
Well, I think, just to piggyback on all of that, you know, there were people that knew me. There were people that knew my heart and knew what I was about and didn't step up.
That hurts.
And I think that sense of betrayal, mm-hmm. and abandonment and that idea that, you know, maybe they would have something more to gain by supporting someone else. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to hell with it, and to hell with you and your personhood and, you know, what you may stand for and how you may be able to serve. And the other thing that killed me about that is that there were a lot of things that I did that people never knew about. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that we didn't photograph. Mm-hmm. I probably hurt the campaign in that I didn't want to go out and take random pictures with Black people.
Right.
Just to take a picture, just to have a photo op. Mm-hmm. Because I was about relationship and I was about being in the community. And I was at so many police and community meetings down in Putnam County, mm-hmm. Down in Sandersville, down, you know, where nobody else was. Mm-hmm. And people didn't hear about that. I was with, you know, family members in a small room talking about, you know, their son who had been shot by the police six mm-hmm. times down in Greene County. And I think, you know, I will say, you know, what you said about the reaction in the community that was not based in truth at all. Mm-hmm. But then contrasting that with my own personal experience and knowing not only who I was, but what I had seen and what I had heard, what I could not unhear. Mm-hmm. And it was very painful, especially to hear that last charge launched against me, mm-hmm. when, you know, people who had seen what I had done out in the district, mm-hmm. could tell you a very different story. So, you know, and then I guess I would also say that feeling of invisibility, as a woman. Mm-hmm. You know, we can say something, we can say it clearly and loudly over and over again. We are seeing it right now with Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. and everything she said about the Russia investigation mm-hmm. and no one listened. Mm-hmm. And there were things that we said during the course of the campaign that, you know, here locally, I think folks would have done well to listen to. Mm-hmm. That sounds a little like finger wagging, so I apologize. But, you know, I think,
until a man says it, they don't listen.
Exactly. And
I've witnessed it in mayor and commission yeah. meetings, committee yes. meetings. It's like a female will say something, then the man yes. says something across the table, and it's like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, did she just say that?
As women, we have to practice saying, I just said that.
Yes. Right. We have to amplify yes. ourselves and each other.
But it comes to the point where I find myself where it's time where I feel like, the same experience, someone's mm-hmm. trying to look over you. So it's like, I, you know, from standing up and speaking on it, now you're the troublemaker, you're the B.I., or yeah. you're the angry black woman, mm-hmm. or, but it's okay, I'm okay now. I'm mm-hmm. okay, I said, I'm gonna have to accept it, because sitting here and being quiet and being always just letting it go by is just not the lick anymore, you mm-hmm. know? What's the best?
The best. Well, I'm going to say the trite thing that everyone says, and it's, you know, meeting people mm-hmm. on the trail. I have to say that, you know, Kimberly is here and she is downplaying her mm-hmm. role in the campaign as a part-time communications director. And she filled the gap when we needed other staffing. She, you know, childcare was always an issue. So sometimes I'd be at a meeting and, you know, she'd hang out with Gwen sometimes. Yeah.
Mom and dad love Gwen.
Yeah.
Because she's an amazing kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, I'd say probably my spiritual advisor. She's been present at all the wow. major events in the campaign and has always, I think, out of anybody, had the courage to speak
yeah.
the truth to me. Mm-hmm. And there have been times that I didn't take your advice and should have. She's never been wrong. Mm-hmm. There I said
it. Hear that?
She's never been wrong. Hey Linda.
Linda's my mom.
She, yeah. yeah. But so you know, meeting people like him, really, you know, making connections out in the district. And going out on a limb here, seeing that there are some Republicans out there
mm-hmm. yeah.
who are still committed to this idea of America and what it can be.
I'm glad you said that, because I tell people, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I just care about what you believe in as far as the cause and how you're going to move forward on advocating for yeah. human rights. Yeah. You know, so I'm glad to hear you say that. Let me see here.
Oh, and we laughed a lot.
We did. Too much.
We laughed probably a lot. If you were ever to see like our flying text messages.
Well, that's
the memes. We had to.
The laughter was needed to get y'all through some of that craziness. Yep. I will say, as far as like online mm-hmm. and people knowing you and not standing up, there's times that have gotten me too. And it's like someone says something and you're sitting here watching everybody having a conversation about this, but no one, people that you know you, stand up. And I had to say to my organization, you know, yeah, I'm the black girl out here fighting for discrimination, you know, against discrimination. What's going to happen when everybody turns on, if everyone turns? It happens. Martin mm-hmm. Luther King, Malcolm X. I'll be crazy not to expect for some dirt or something, you know, ill will. What are you going to do as my team? Are you going to sit there and watch it? Are you going to stand up for me? And I don't know, because I realize a lot of people, they don't like dealing with conflict or putting themselves at risk, but they're good at pushing you to put yourself at risk mm-hmm. and be in the forefront. So I definitely sympathize with you on that. Would you run again?
Possibly. I don't know that I would run for this seat again right away. I think mm-hmm. that there might be some other goals. So, you know, and I do have an 8-year-old daughter. I sat down this summer and realized I missed a year of her life.
Yeah.
She kind of grew up in the last year without me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big sacrifice. Yeah. And, you know, I still want to serve and I want to be out there, but I think,
there are other ways you could serve.
Right.
If you decide not to run for office again.
Yeah.
You know, that would keep you home. But, you know, speaking for myself, I think, you know, you're a person who, in 10 years, when Gwen is 18 and mm-hmm. off in college, if you were to mount another campaign, I'd be right there.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think that the way you handled yourself
mm-hmm.
for your first run for office was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And if it weren't for the freaking alphabet, we'd still be working.
You know,
we still be working. Sorry, I'm just gonna say it.
Well, the alphabet, and it was between like 67 and 150 votes, whichever way
yeah.
you want to cut it,
yeah.
Between us and a runoff.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a thing. I'm not going to lie. I'm new to the political thing. When I jumped in, one of the reasons I didn't run was because of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I have teenagers.
Yeah.
And I already, with the activism stuff, I already see how it impacts our lives. And I'm not at home in the afternoons. And, you know, the routine is out of whack. Like being a mom, a normal mom is out of whack. And I'm trying to grip it. So that I totally understand if you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you do miss out. You
and
do.
That's the thing, too, that District 10 is huge.
It's 25 counties.
It's 25 counties.
Wow.
And so she went to every county.
You
Many
went
more
to
than
all
us.
25?
I think, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Pretty much, right?
I might have missed one or two.
Yeah. But they didn't have a lot of votes.
Yeah.
But we tried to focus on all, at least 23 of the 25 counties.
Mm-hmm.
She's been she campaigned since July.
Wow.
So it was a long, long process. And it definitely... You know, they are not a family of wealth or privilege.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't connected to the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And so it definitely takes a toll on the family.
Yeah.
But she had the support. Like, her husband was, like, super dad, super husband. Ken was freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. And no, she did not have to ask his permission. As Jody Heiss, you know, said.
No permission asked over here.
So I think... you know, because family is so important, I definitely think you know, when Gwen gets older, you should run again.
Well, and she's been lecturing me. Just so you know, she does this. She's very good at this truth-telling thing we've been talking about. So she and my husband were sitting in the their favorite recliner mm-hmm. together the other day, and they said, you know, we think you're good at this. We mm-hmm. think that you enjoy this. You need to run again.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's saying, yeah, Mom, you really... You know, and I'm over there rolling my eyes like, I'm tired.
What about the local level?
Well, and
I mean,
right.
You know, commission, different things, you know?
So, just, you know, I've been in Athens.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but just think about it, yeah.
I've been in Athens a whole lot, and some of your listeners might think that I'm an Athenian. I'm not. I live out in Styx in Barrow County. And so, mm-hmm. My area, Tom Kirby, that's District 114, House District,
mm-hmm.
Has gone unchallenged. So, you know, that's definitely an option. You know, there are some other ways that I'm jumping in to serve with some women kind of down in Atlanta and some of those old Ossoff, you know, campaigners and things like that. So
it definitely takes some regrouping now, I think.
Yeah. How long have you been regrouping?
Since May 23rd. Yeah. Well, and I think just really in the past couple of days, I've not maybe needed a nap. You know, I think I can go for long periods without sleep, you know, and kind of be up till 2-3 in the morning and get up really early, take the kid to school, do it, you know, all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point you have
to
take,
yeah,
take that time.
What advice would you give to someone that is considering running 2020?
My first bit of advice is to make sure that you have a kitchen table cabinet around you before you even decide to run.
Break that down.
So a kitchen table cabinet are people who you know and trust.
Okay.
Who can help you, you know, work through the pros and cons of even running.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what it's going to look like for you to run.
Mm-hmm.
Here's who your possible, you know, competition could be. here's how much money it's going to take. Here's what you're going to have to do to fundraise. And it's got to be people who know you and who you trust to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. And ideally, it would be people who already, you know, are in public office. Mm-hmm. But you have to have that support system, that core group, before you even decide to run. Mm. You know, and your family has to be a part of that kitchen table, because if you don't have their support, mm-hmm. then you're not going to get very far. You know, so you have to have that core group around you who you know is going to support you no matter what. Mm-hmm. Because people can be fickle, you know, and they can decide to throw their support beside, you know, they can have support you one day and support someone else the next day. Mm-hmm. And people can also lie. Mm-hmm. Let's just be real. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure you have people around you that you trust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, political campaigning is not like going to the moon. There are tried and true ways and methods to do it. Mm-hmm. You have to decide what's best for you. Mm-hmm. And then what office are you going to run for? Mm-hmm. How hard are you willing to fight? Mm-hmm. How important is it to you? Mm-hmm. Those are things that you really, I think, you have to consider.
Wow. How much? Because I've heard different numbers. How much does it take to run a congressional?
To win this seat. I don't care about running anymore. I mean, like, I want to know what it takes to win. Mm-hmm. $1 million at least.
That's how much you have to raise to do all the runs and the commercials and the.
So the thing that I would suggest, and every district is different, mm-hmm. right? Just like every hometown is different. This district is rural. We get a very different picture of what it is to live in District 10 if we're in Athens. Mm-hmm. You got to get out of the district. You got to go travel. You got to talk to people. People outside of Athens Clark County think pretty differently. But I would do a SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, on yourself. I would do OPPO research on yourself.
What do you mean OPPO?
Opposition.
Opposition.
Like, so, what could the opposition develop?
Okay. Yeah, Google yourself. Do, you know,
social media.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's okay if there is, you know, I have student loan debt. You know, if you might have said something that somebody could take the wrong way, you have to figure out in advance, what is your response going to be? Mm. Stacey Abrams is a good example of this. She talks about her brother who is incarcerated. Right. And she uses that to talk about criminal justice reform in the most brilliant way possible. So just take your weakness, make it into a strength, mm-hmm. And kind of start that process for anybody that you might be running against so that you are really ready. Mm-hmm. I would also say to make a long list of everybody that you know or have ever met with their telephone numbers. Mm-hmm. And Kimberly might fall out of her chair when she hears me say this, but you have to fundraise first. I don't like the money part.
See Kimberly's face right now.
Nobody does.
They jump in and they just start
asking people for money. Mm-hmm.
But get that money first build it up so that you can use it when you need it instead of being, you know, at the end
always
going,
scrambling.
Yeah, am I going to have enough for this? Or would I, you know, really like to pay a full-time salary to what is my really full-time communications director.
I totally understand.
And then that what that money buys you is staff right away. What happens in Athens, if anybody's thinking about running in Athens, mm-hmm. is that even though it's a fairly progressive city, there is a paucity of political talent. We just don't have enough folks with the expertise in running campaigns. And then if you have a lot of local elections going on at the same time and somebody has thought way ahead and has grabbed up like 20 really great people, mm-hmm. then you don't have, you know,
enough people
to work your campaign.
Okay.
So you have to fundraise first, get out ahead of the pack. You have to find your people first, get out ahead of the pack. Just be first.
Okay.
And last bit of advice, you are enough. I saw you write that down earlier, but
yeah,
you are enough.
I thought that was, I would say that a lot of people, even my students, that's something I have to get them past. And to hear you say that, it's like me telling them you're enough. You're enough to accomplish this goal. You're enough to go to college. Just find it in you. Don't forget about the past mistakes. And to hear you say that, someone that has ran for office, and that's a big fear, like, but no one is perfect. No one is perfect. So
I'm going to put an asterisk
back to
an asterisk by that, though. You are enough to run. Mm-hmm. Women need to hear that you're enough to run. However, once you're running, mm-hmm. you have to honor your responsibility to the people who are supporting you, both financially and with their volunteer efforts, that you are as prepared as possible on all of the issues, mm-hmm. and that you are meeting those obligations. And so one thing that, you know, I wish I would have done differently was probably fundraise more, because that ultimately, you know, lets people down on the campaign.
Okay, so how do you balance politics and religion? Because as an activist, I believe in spiritual activism. Mm-hmm. I try to follow my spirit. A lot of times I pray, you know, no, I don't have a home church in Athens or anything, but I really believe in like cultivating my spirit. So I try to just listen to it and let it lead me. And then you hear all the outside noise coming in. How do you balance religion and politics?
Very carefully. you know, and it is significantly easier on the right. The right has used religion, specifically Christianity, to kind of brandish their brand. And so, you know, reclaiming that mantle of Christian faith while still making it clear that you value people of all faiths and none, and that you'll place your responsibility, your oath to the Constitution over any particular personal feelings you may have, mm-hmm. That's a very tricky balance. And so what you have to do is be able to say, you know, the faith that I practice is a Matthew 25:40 faith, mm-hmm. Which, you know, says whatever you do to the least of these, you do also to me. And that's, okay. You know, find the verses from whatever your faith practice is. Maybe you're not a Christian. Maybe you are a Hindu, or, you know, you're a Jewish person. There's a wonderful Muslim candidate running somewhere south of Atlanta, and she's having to straddle that line between, you know, religion and politics, yeah. Of course. So you have to find whatever aspect of your faith practice relates broadly, and use that, and just make sure that you are empowering kind of everybody within your sphere. You know, our campaign had a variety of folks of different faith backgrounds, and, you know, so that's another thing you could do, is make sure that you're surrounded with that kind of diverse view.
I like that. My last question is, I was a little bit shocked with the outcome of the, you know, the results, because I've been watching, and I saw you in it for a while, and I saw Winfield in it, and I'm watching it like a movie, and then here comes Tabitha, and I'm watching it, and then the outcome was a little bit shocking. So how do you feel about the outcome?
Well, I'll say that having spoken to Tabitha a couple times during the course of the primary, she and I did have a shared goal. And so I was glad that shared goal was accomplished. Mm-hmm. you know, our placement in the race, you know, reflects the time that we're living in, mm-hmm. and the recognition that women do have a lot to bring to the table.
So, but I'm interested in this is new to me. So that's why I'm asking, like, 5 months in the race compared to 2 years?
Well, no, she, one to 2 years. Chala started in July.
Okay.
Professor Winfield started in January.
Officially.
Okay, so
you've been campaigning.
Okay.
Since July.
Unofficially since July.
Okay, okay.
Because I met him at the Sam Abrams event in July. And Tabitha entered the race in March, so right. Not even 5 months. So we've heard a lot of rumors and conjecture as to why this happened, and that she was running a super secret black church campaign, and it's just implausible. It's mm-hmm. just implausible. What's most likely is that there's something that research shows is first name bias on the ballot. And so because of the alphabet, her name was listed first. Mm-hmm. We had so many people running on the Democratic ballot for state offices that by the time you got to that federal office, there was a lot of ballot fatigue. Mm-hmm. And people didn't necessarily know enough about that race because of the focus on all these other state races. And a lot of people just would check their first name on the ballot, And that is the thing. That's something that does happen. It's been proven to happen. It's been shown to happen. And I think to decide for some reason that, you know, otherwise, not only does it do a disservice to the candidates who did mount strong campaigns, but it does a disservice to, you know, particularly the African American community. A lot of people are saying that, oh, she got the black vote, she went to black churches. Well, you know, we're not people who will look at a candidate's website, see nothing there, and still vote.
Okay.
So we're just not people. We just, you know, we're educated voters. And so we want more than a person who looks like us. You have to have some type of substance. The fact that she won Athens, the fact that she placed ahead of Winfield in Athens,
okay,
is like, how else do you explain that?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just really, you know, when I hear that, oh, black people in black churches voted for her, as an African American who goes to churches, whose family members go to black churches, I'm like, look, no, that's not, you know, this was not, you know, a cry against white, you know, white female, white male. No, sorry.
Right.
Well, and she will tell you that there are counties that she didn't go to and that she won handily.
Yeah.
So things like that can happen in an election. And I think you asked how I felt, you know, or how we felt afterwards. While we did feel like there was maybe something taken away, you know, at the same time, you have to be able to take that result and move on in life. And, you know, just it is what it is. So I think, you know, my frustration is some of the things we've already covered, is that, you know, endorsements do matter. We had a margin of under 200 votes, depending on where they would have been taken from, you know, either from Tabitha or from Richard, and, you know, that separated us from a runoff and a second chance at, you know, succeeding past the primary. So I think that the key takeaway is that as much as we want to be activists, mm-hmm. I think that we have to remember the people that we are trying to support. Yeah. And we have to be clear-headed about who is in those seats of power, who has a chance at taking that seat, and be strategic about how we want to support people and who we want to support in that way. You know, there's not going to be ever a perfect candidate. Mm-hmm. I would say to your voters, to your listeners, pick the person who is most likely to line up with you 80% of the time, who you feel that you could push, mm-hmm. and continue to do the work that you need to do as a voter and as a citizen to push your representatives to do what you feel they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, I'm proud of both of you ladies. It was nice watching, you know. I know Kim and I know, you know, I met Kim before I met you, and I thought she's good people. So I feel like her mom is good people. And so I was just watching it, you know, and I learned a lot from both of y'all. And I'm proud of y'all, especially stepping up for the first time. We needed it. We needed it. So.
We really did. Yeah, we really needed a strong, you know, a strong race to show that we're not going to, you know, mm-hmm. sit back anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We can't let the Jody Heises of the world think that they have everything locked up. Mm-hmm. And no matter the outcome of the general, we still have to fight.
Still have to fight.
One concern that I do hear on the street is that there are some divisions, especially in the Athens community, yeah. that are probably not going to heal anytime soon as a result of this race.
I think so. I pretty much.
And not even just this race, but some of the local races as well.
Right.
And especially for me, as someone who was born here and whose family goes back generations here, to see some of the things in the local races that were just very vitriolic.
Mm-hmm.
And very disturbing. And I, you know, I get it. Like, I'm not one of those people who, you know, it's like, oh, civility is everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people can do some lasting damage.
Yeah.
People can do some lasting damage.
I would say that we would all do well to make a concerted effort to look to leaders mm-hmm. who speak the truth really, you know, strongly, unambiguously, as I said before. But don't veer into, you know, tearing down someone's character.
So
someone like William Barber, okay. he does not play around. You know, Maxine Waters don't tells the truth, and, you know, yeah. and there are some strong leaders out there. You know, I would point probably more towards William Barber. But
yeah, he's a person of faith.
Yeah, I like him.
He's doing so much good. Mm-hmm. And he has had to take, he's been through the gauntlet, especially in North Carolina and the Moral Mondays and just being attacked over and over again. And, you know, I think part of it too is understanding your purpose, not just as a person, but if you are trying to lead a campaign or lead some kind of effort, you have to understand your purpose and sort of keep your eye on that prize.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you have to have people around you who are going to build you up no matter what and tell you the truth when you stumble, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's really key.
Is there anything else you want to say? Give a shout out to the baby.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think there are a lot of people who are, you know, disappointed in the race because they supported me or because they've supported, you know, Richard. Thank you to everyone, you know, who came out and participated in this election and cared enough to engage. And I would say, you know, don't allow the outcome of the election to deter you from continuing to mature politically and to, continue to figure out, you know, where you fit and what you can do, because we can all do something. And really it's vital as part of a participatory democracy that we continue to stay active and engaged in our communities. So just thank you to everybody who, you know, helped at any point or gave well wishes or just watched the race.
I would say both to you and Noah.
Mm-hmm.
That we need you,
mm-hmm.
not just as activists, but we need you guys running for public office.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say it.
It's scary, girl.
I know.
It's very scary, but we're very real people, so I don't want to be on TV.
But what I want to tell you, though, what I want to tell you both is that a lot of what has happened in Athens has been sparked by you all.
Thank you.
With the Athens anti-discrimination movement.
Thank you.
And you guys aren't from here.
Thank you, I so
and you came into Athens and you have started, you know, really started this movement that has people standing up and taking notice, and that's important. Think about what you can do with that type of energy mm-hmm. in a public office. You guys know how to make people pay attention. And again, I'll say to you what I said to them. If you guys ever run, you call me. Because I'm there.
Same.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, I particularly, you know, I saw what happened with Noah when he went on Harry's campaign.
Yeah.
I had to drop
you
the
saw
hammer.
That,
on people.
Right?
I had to drop the hammer. Some people went, look, this is a grown man.
I thought we were able to make decisions.
I make our own decisions. Hello? And so, again, there are people, all your skin folk ain't kin folk.
No.
You know?
Just saying.
We was watching that online when Noah decided that he was going to support Harry Sims.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people online was very interesting, and some of the same people who knew us,
mm-hmm.
like, just knew us being around us. Some of the things that I saw online, that's when I really realized that it's dangerous.
Advice for anybody wanting to run,
mm-hmm.
let somebody else control your social media.
Don't look at Facebook. Don't look at Twitter. Let somebody, and this is what...
This is what my friend Chalice Montgomery had difficulties with. And it's what I had difficulty with, because I was, you know, as a communications, I'm supposed to see what's out there, and you want to, and sometimes what I would do is I would see someone post something that was just wrong or lies, and I would like write a response, screen grab it, and delete it.
Okay.
And just let it go.
Yeah.
And just let it go.
Yeah.
Okay, that's for the book, you know?
Right.
And so, because you can't let them deter you
or distract you. That's what it is. It's a distraction for 5 days. I was distracted. I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing?
It's a distraction.
When did I see him? When did I see him?
It takes you off your game. It took me off my game.
Yeah. I was on a mission. I'm like, wait till I see him.
So the people that do that kind of thing, know that they don't have anything else to go on.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have no other substance. They have no other effort that they are behind, that they are creating, that they are working to build. And so all they have is to tear you down.
Yeah, and throw flames. And watch it burn.
Ooh, boy.
And if people you don't give it any air, the flame dies out.
People think that's what I want to say. When you see something out there on social media, before piggybacking, do your research and think.
Yep.
Anything else, ladies?
Thank you for the opportunity to participate with you. We love you.
We love you too.
And she's sharp. Anybody looking for a communication director, man, I'm telling you, this girl knows how to write.
Thank you.
I wish I could pay you to like do my book or something. You know what I mean? But okay, y'all. Well, that is it. This is your girl, Mocha. Thank you for having a real conversation with me. And make sure you tune in next time.